not a basketball play, but, you know, got to play through it.
Coaches, welcome back to the Talking Split podcast. It has been a while since we were last on. I did incorrectly say that we'd be back in mid-May, and mid-May turns into early June very easily, as it turns out. I am Rob Calder, joined once again by Zoe Carr from the Victoria Country Women. Welcome, Zoe.
Thank you for having me.
And Nathan Cooper-Brown for the Victoria Country Men. Welcome, Coops.
Stoked to be back.
Excellent to have you
did
both
you
back.
Stoic to be back?
Stoked. Oh, geez, it started early. So you two do have a little bit of a knack of going into part twos of podcasts as we go through this. Given the topic this week is tournament coaching, and this is coming into a long weekend where there's a lot of tournament coaching, please get this done in one, just so that we don't stretch this out and give a whole bunch of information that's not going to be relevant to any of our coaches. Coaches, as a bit of a reminder, you can follow along on the Talking Split socials. So that's at Talking Split on both X and Instagram if you've got anything to say or interact. Of course, always love the ratings and reviews. If you're able to do those on the iTunes podcast app, that'd be fantastic. Obviously, you can get us on Spotify as well if you want us. There has been so much going on since we were last involved. We'll start with the Under-18 Nationals tournament. Coops, your boys jagged a bronze whilst up there. Happy with the week? Disappointed with the week? What were the things you saw that you're really going to hone in on, I suppose, for the next block with your athletes?
Little bit bittersweet, and not to be unappreciative, but that was, you know, a generational group for us. You know, probably one of the best Country Vic men's teams that we've ever had, you know. You know, with so many guys at the NBA Global and, you know, green and gold athletes, you know, bronze, fantastic result. You know, really great to see the guys, you know, grind through that, and especially come back after, you know, the semi-final loss to SA Met and pick it up. You know, that's always a tough game. But we did feel like, you know, we should have been in that gold medal game. So, obviously, it just keeps, you know, the motivation going and keeps us driving to get to the next level. But, you know, something that Adam Tarr reminded me of, which was that we don't think that an under-18 Vic Country men's team has ever back-to-back medaled. So to actually, you know, have that happen, you know, in my tenure and with the people that are involved in the program, especially over the last 5 years, it's a real credit to them. And obviously that's something that we're really proud of. Yeah, it was an interesting tournament. You know, we're continuing to see some trends around, you know, shooting continues to decrease, you know, as pace of play and the want and need to attack the paint increases. Turnover rate continues to increase. So there is an increase or an improvement in playing in system and developing teams that understand how to play to their strengths of the system. And there was a lot of coaches up in Brisbane that did that. But there does seem to be that issue in skill that is not being prioritized right now. You know, contested shooting, shooting on the move, free throw shooting, end of penetration execution, adaptive finishing. So yeah, it was enjoyable to watch. You know, with a couple of different hats on, but yeah, there's definitely areas that we need to keep improving.
Yeah, absolutely, and it is one of those things you can't be disappointed with a medal. Like it is one of those things. Like everyone wants to go there to try and get a gold, but really only one team's getting it, and you've one got to be good, and two you got to get some luck to get there. So it is one of those areas where you only need one bad possession, it feels like, at times, and all of a sudden you're out of a game that you feel like you should be in, and it moves on. And Zoe, your girls got bronze as well at the tournament.
They sure did. If anyone had read Rob's travel blogs, went away shortly
trying
after.
Trying to forget the travel blog era after Dubai Airport. But
shortly after Nationals, we went on a holiday, and I spent that 3 weeks reminding Rob about the bronze medal. Really, really proud of the group. We had our COE athlete, Sophie Taylor, taken out of the group a few weeks before they left, which is a lot of scoring punch and just brings a lot of settled sort of, you know, there's a lot of confidence when she's on the floor. And so it was a bit of a, oh, how's this going to go? And that group and that staff, they just battled. There were times where, and I've said it to every hub that I've been to, any camp that we've had, they won some games by just simply playing harder. They weren't out skilling anybody, or they weren't out executing anybody. They just played harder than everybody. And they were unified. They were goal-oriented, and it was just – it was a real pleasure to watch. After we won our quarterfinal, Coops had to pick me up off the floor because I was a blubbering mess. Because to finish top four and then to go on and convincingly win the bronze medal was just, yeah, I couldn't have been more proud, and it's a real testament to those athletes and the coaches that are working with them in the region.
Yeah, it is awesome to have that kind of a result as well. And it's, I think for country, we kind of forget a little bit at times, we're not always going to be guaranteed of like semi-finals. It's, I mean, sometimes you just don't have the level of depth that other states have and those types of things. So to get into those games, it's almost at times you don't know how to play in them because you're not there often.
Yeah.
And it's a nice, I suppose, beacon for a lot of other kids that are in the program now, that it's like, well, actually, someone else has gone before us and has done it. Now we want to strive to not only do it, but better it.
Yeah, I think we worked it out, and from playing population, we sit sort of like fifth or sixth in terms of playing population or participation rates. So, you know, we're batting well above our average in the moment by being, you know, super competitive and meddling and being in big games. So, yeah, I'm still not over it. I'm still pretty pumped with it.
Better go over it pretty quick. 16s are coming up around the corner. Like it's a whole new world coming up. What were the? Was it any different on the women's side to the men's side? With
no, not really. Turnovers were a big problem, particularly in the middle third. So getting the ball in wasn't too much of an issue, but advancing it was a problem. And I think it more often than not came from an unwillingness, not an inability, to kick the ball ahead when it was open, because when the ball's in the air, that's scary time. You know, it's easily picked off. If it's in my hand, I should be able to look after it. As well as from a lane running perspective, I know our groups, it's something we're working on at the moment. We do a great job of sprinting the lane and owning the corner, and then we stand there. And when our point guard's under pressure, we've got to lift back out of that corner. So it's all about that sort of development. And, you know, but I mean, the way the tournament went, the two teams that should have been in the grand final were in the grand final. That was the grand final game. But to be next best was just incredible.
Yeah, fantastic. So 16's coming up, obviously, in July in Bendigo, which would be great. A little bit of a home tournament for everyone. So always nice just up the highway. So be fantastic if as many Victorian people that want to go and have a little bit of a look and support our teams would be able to get there. Would be fantastic. We've also got the Accelerator Women's Coaching Program that will be running at the same time. So we've got 8 women coaches that are going to jump in and sort of observe the tournament for the first 3 or so days. We'll do some work with them off the court. And that's about developing our next generation of coaches as well, that hopefully we want to aspire to coach at that level. So there's going to be a hive of information going on there, but you won't be there, Coops.
No, I'll get back on July 11th. So my hope is to maybe take a day of rest and reintroduce myself to the family, and then head up to Bendigo for the finals. Yep. So fingers crossed.
So that is because you're off to the other side of the world.
Yeah.
Crocs camp has been and gone. Team picked. World's coming up. What are we looking at, expecting? How did it all go?
Yeah, it was really good. The camp was high functioning, had a bit of gravitas. We were really lucky to have a number of NBL coaches come and be a part of the camp in observing. So Bill Tomlinson, Brian Gorgian, Adam Ford, Justin Schuler, Jacob Chance. You know, these guys were there. They were into it. Pat Hunt was there. Cal Bruton, like, people wanted to be at that camp. They wanted to see what the kids were up to and who was pushing for selection and, you know, and what sort of group we're going to send away to Turkey. We had the absolute privilege of having Gorge talk to the group, and it was just outstanding the way that he was able to connect what they do at Boomers level to us at Crocs level was just, you know, couldn't have scripted it any better in the message that he was able to deliver to the group. On the floor, again, because we're so low on time, my priority really is trying to put the system in and get us really comfortable to a level that we understand who we are and what we're trying to do. You know, when we talk about, you know, philosophies that fit on napkins, for us it's stop and run. You know, we want to be elite defensively. We want to be able to turn teams over, get out and use our athleticism, our speed, and try and score in the first 8 seconds of the clock. So that really drove what we were doing. We talk heavily about being the best cutting team in the world. You know, we don't want that to be hyperbole. Like, we really work on that. We work on cutting every session. You know, we use constraints. We emphasize it. Again, that was really nice to have that connect to the Boomers as well. That's something that they're really big on. So, yeah, we had some themes and the guys really bought into that. It was competitive. We had really good feedback. Lono was really happy with the camp. And so, you know, when we left after that, you know, 3.5-4 days, we were feeling really good about what we're able to put, you know, put on film, put on the floor, the team that we selected, and we're really excited to get over there and test ourselves against the best of the world.
Yeah, awesome. Could you imagine Coops after the Gorge chat? Like, it would have been like trying to rip the top off. It's like, I'm playing this next scrimmage, guys. This is how it needs to look from here on in. It would have been next level. But awesome opportunity as well. Like, not every day you get the Boomers coach come in, obviously, and be able to have a chat to your kids, which, you know, I'm sure their eyes were like saucers as well. Like, it would have been phenomenal. One thing we'll discuss, obviously, in the drop at the very start, Caitlin Clark. It's, if you know anything about basketball now, you are seeing her name everywhere, being probably one of the most spoken about athletes in the world at this stage. Zoe, what's your take on Caitlin? Just out of curiosity, because you've obviously followed a little bit of her career from the FIBA world into college and now into WNBA. Give us your take on where Caitlin's at the moment.
How long have you got?
Well, I did say no part twos.
I'm really disappointed in the treatment that she is copying at the moment. I think there's a lot of it is fueled by jealousy because of the amount of exposure that she's getting and where she's at in her career as a first year. And I'm happy to retract this if there's something more that's happening over there that hasn't come over here from a behavior or something like that, or something's been said that's out of line or something like. I'm happy to retract this. But for a league that is often on the right side of social issues, for women to just simply not be supporting women through what can only be described from an outsider's view, from jealousy, is really disappointing. And it makes me I love watching the WNBA, and I've sort of cooled off it because of this. Like, it's sad. It's really sad. I spend my days every day trying to teach young women how to be proud of themselves for their ability, and it's okay to say you're good at something, and it's okay to be good and put yourself out there. And, you know, like, the amount of kids I've said, hey, don't be afraid to be the best. Well, look at what that's getting her right now. And so now how do I combat that with these young athletes that I'm working with who go, well, hold on, the best players just stepped into the best league in the world. And that's how she's treated. I just find it really disappointing. Like I said, if there's more to it that I'm not across yet, I'll happily retract. But yeah, it actually gets to the point where I start to rage about it. With anyone who knows me, will be shocked.
No, the body language has changed significantly since we started this.
I tried to be good, but yeah, it's just really sad. I think it's sending a terrible, terrible message to young women. And not just young athletes, young women in general. Like, we're just eating our own, and it's horrible.
Well, and realistically, it really is a case of a rising tide floats all boats. Yeah. Like, there are so many more eyes on the WNBA at the moment due to the notoriety and the popularity of a lot of that draft class, because it's not just Caitlin Clark, it's Cameron Brink, it's Angel Reese, Cardoso that's coming as well. Like that is a well-known draft class, and everyone's sort of like, geez, this is probably the generational one coming through. There are so many more people watching it at the moment, and you know, to Caitlin's credit, like she hasn't complained once. She just wears it, and it's like, hey, chest out, I'm taking these hits, I'm going to try and drag an Indiana group which had the number one pick for a reason. Like that's how this works. Like you don't tend to go to a good team when you're drafted first, unless someone in the front office has traded away your future draft picks stupidly. But
Portland,
I maintain our group with Brandon Roy, LaMarcus Aldridge, you know, Rudy Fernandez, Nicholas Batum, Steve Blake. I'll sort of cop Greg Oden. It was good. Like we won games, but I digress. It is one of those areas too where so many more eyes are on it. Like it was funny. I was at an FTP session a couple of weeks ago, and I asked the group who's the best shooter in the world at the moment. And for years, the answer coming back has been Steph. The first two answers I got this time, Sabrina and Caitlin. And it's like, isn't this an interesting shift? And both of them were from boys.
Yeah.
It's like, this is an interesting shift. And for so long, we have spoken about it's not people that actually understand the sport that hate on women's basketball. It's the idiots that play pickup ball and YMCA basketball that it's like, hey, you know, it's terrible. I could play in that league. No, you couldn't. Like, you genuinely couldn't. I could catch you in a running race. You couldn't. I can promise you that. So it is really interesting to see the rhetoric that's coming out around this at the moment. What I have been really pleased with is the amount of people that are jumping in and saying, hey, you need to lift this player up. Like, she's phenomenal to watch. We love watching her play. All that sort of stuff. It's just so refreshing from that end to see it. And, you know, she hasn't put a foot wrong.
Yeah, the professionalism of her, how she's dealing with all of this is beyond her years, frankly. I am not too proud to admit I wouldn't be able to handle it like that. I would have lost it and probably punched on. But she's just keeping going, keeping fighting. Eventually it'll wear off and it will – but the fact that it's happened and it's really hard to rewind and pretend that it hasn't happened after the fact. You know, you don't get to just behave a certain way, say sorry, and then all is forgiven. You know, it's what's happening here is just, like I said, really disappointing, and I think just setting a really terrible precedent for one, and sending a horrible message to our young females who we're trying to encourage to be strong and be proud and, you know, be good, step outside your comfort zone and be good.
So from a coaching perspective, how do we actually encourage that with our kids? Because, and it doesn't matter boys or girls, it's all of our junior players are almost like, it's the tall poppy thing, of course. I want to be good, but I don't want to be so good that now people target me and come after me. How do we actually teach them to be, no, this is okay. It's good to be good.
Yeah, what I've found has been useful is playing them against older kids, because the older kids can still go with them. Yep. So they're not, you know, and often, more often than not, probably beat them.
Kind of appreciate their age.
But appreciate their age. They, you know, when they do something amazing, they're up and about rather than, again, that jealousy reaction. And then we've got to teach the athlete, and it was a conversation I actually had with an athlete over the weekend. If you're going to be great, sometimes you have to leave people behind. And if, you know, you never drop to their level, you got to drag them up. And if they don't want to come, that's where they stay and you keep going. And it's hard because sometimes it's friends. But if you want to be great, you've got to be okay with the fact that some people are going to be upset with the fact that you're great. But that's a mark on them. It's got nothing to do with who you are as a person, who you are as an athlete. That's their issue that they need to deal with, and it doesn't and shouldn't affect you. Yep. Easier said than done. You got to make sure there's a family structure around them that can help with that as well, because we only get to see them once or twice a week if we're lucky. So the family education on that's really important too.
What about you, Coach? What have you found?
Yeah, I think building on that is character development. you know, as part of the holistic approach to you know, building up young people in particular. And it's humility, right? You know, in that that's something that should be discussed, and how it relates to who they are as a person and how it relates to this talent that they're building through hard work, and that you can be a high character, you know, humble, generous, caring, kind person and still be an absolute elite killer basketball player. You know, the two you know, aren't mutually exclusive. So I think more discussions around that and how those things can, yeah, affect who you are and where you are, I think is really important. Us as coaches, you know, shouldn't shy away from that.
Well, and it's part of it too, is that how many of our kids would identify themselves as, I'm a basketball player? It's like, well, no, that's part of your makeup, but it's not who you are as a person.
Yeah, too many is the answer, yeah, for sure. That's, yeah,
that's
yeah,
absolutely the reality of it. Yeah. It's great that you want to be a basketballer and all that sort of stuff, but that's not who you are. Like, it's just a part of your makeup. And, you know, to be completely fair, as coaches, we have that feeling as well. Like, I know there are times it's like, you know, what are you about? And it's like, oh, I'm a basketball coach. It's like, oh, actually, well, it's not really what I am. I also enjoy barbecue.
I'm a barbecuer. Yeah,
it's those types of things.
A canine enthusiast.
Like, yeah. But you do have to develop the person as well as the player.
Yeah.
And, you know, that, again, I can only speak for what we see. From Caitlin, she seems like a pretty humble kid that is just very confident in what she does.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that. Do you remember the footage during during March Madness, and she was starting to lose it? She was starting to get off track a little bit and start to behave a little bit poorly. Camera pans to her dad because she's looking at her dad, and he just goes, "Shut up!" Like, that's what I mean. Like, that's the balance, I think, from a family perspective, they need to strike is, you know, you want to be there. You are 100% there for your child as a person, as an athlete. You're their biggest cheerleader, but sometimes you've got to put their feet back on the ground as well. And to see that for the best player in the world from her dad in a big moment that was televised everywhere, amazing.
Yeah, so the tagline for this podcast is Zoe condones kids looking to their parents after things go wrong in games. Like, it's
hey, she won't look again if he's going to tell her to shut up.
Well, the good news is she probably can't find him now because
venues are packed out.
Venues are packed. Yeah. Not only are they packed out, they're having to go to bigger venues.
Yeah.
Like, how good is that? We just saw the Arsenal women have now started playing at the Emirates for next season. But that's big, incidentally.
So good.
Go City, four in a row. like, we'll remind Bestie of that in the future. But it is one of those things too where it really is. Like, the amount of attention and eyes on the league now is fantastic. And the hope is that obviously flows into our WNBL type leagues, and that gets more promotion as well. It's been in the news a fair bit of late, of course, and we won't get right into the nuts and bolts of it, but a, you know, new franchise starting up with Melbourne Boomers relocating down to Geelong. So that'll be a whole new sort of setup there. Southside Flyers obviously won the WNBL last year. We are somewhat Victorian Jack Jumpers won the NBL since we were last on here as well. It's the Victorian thing, claim anything that's outside of Victoria as being Victorian. Yeah. Jack Fleming.
Well, that's Australian in everything. General. Yeah. Like, New Zealand have never done a thing.
No.
They're all Australian.
Yeah. I've got to tell you, Australians, we say it with their chest too. Like, split ends was Australian. Yeah. Like, it's that kind of thing. So there's so much movement going on, in particular at that kind of high level, that basketball is in a really good position from just from being publicised. I think it's actually a really good thing, and we as coaches play a big part in that too. Like, we have to do our job at the junior level to make sure that our players can progress through whatever avenue they want to take and get to wherever they can get to as well. So I think it's a big part of it. Coaches, please don't discount the work that you do in this space, because it is a really big part of it. And speaking of coach shout-outs, so if you do have any coach shout-outs, please do send them through. I did get one over the break that I really enjoyed. So Nathan Morgan, the coach of the 16-1 boys out at Nunawading, so has a great group of kids in there that he's worked with, meddled the group into a really formidable and emphasising teamwork, utilisation of individual player strengths to the benefit of the whole, and just enjoyment for the game of the players and himself. Really even-headed and calm with the boys, which they respond to. And commands their respect with his knowledge of the game and understanding of the generation's communication style as well, which is always great to hear that coaches are finding different ways to communicate with their players as they're coming through. Prioritises player development over winning, ka-ching. That is the sweet spot over everything else. And takes great personal effort to ensure every player knows their development areas and has support they need to improve. So under Nathan's leadership, the team's happy and able to focus on their own and the team's development, which is a consequence to a strong contributing driver to the team's winning culture, which frankly is fantastic to hear. And it's great that someone has taken the time to send that in. Like I know Nathan's a listener of the podcast, so hopefully he gets this and it's like, hey, that's me. But it is something too that if you do have a coach that is in your world, I suppose, that you see doing a good job, please send that in and we'll shout them out on this thing too, because it is something that we don't always get the positives to hear through this sort of stuff. So it is a great thing to be able to do for a lot of our coaches out there. It's I love the prioritizers development over winning, because it's really easy to get hung up on, oh, we have to win. And God, the amount of stories I get from coaches, it's like, hey, how'd you go on the weekend? Oh, we won or we lost. We got zoned for 32 minutes. It's like, come on. Like that's and look, I'll throw it out there. I'm not an advocate for playing match-up defense for 32 minutes either. Like, I do believe that you need to chop and change and expose all your players to everything. But the whole, I'm going to zone because I know that will win me games and that's the priority, that is not the way to go about keeping our kids in the sport and developing them as athletes moving forward. Our job is to expose them to as much stuff as we can and develop in the areas where they fall off. That is our job as coaches. So that is really promising to hear as well. So if you do have any coach shout-outs, please send them through and we'll throw them on the podcast. The actual topic, 26 minutes in and we finally got here. But, yeah, it's been a while. I did say mid-May, but, you know.
Part two?
No, there will be no part two. I'm telling you right now, you've both got an 11 o'clock meeting and there will be no part two. Coaching in tournaments, this is a big weekend coming up. So this will drop on the Friday of the King's Birthday weekend. So for those of you that aren't aware, there'll be obviously a classic tournament on for our VC level teams. There'll be a tournament going on at Nutter Wadding at the same time. There'll be a tournament going on in Ballarat. So there's a lot of teams that will come in from outside of town to play in those types of things as well. How do you feel about tournament weekends? I'll go to you first, Zoe, because I've got my opinions on them, but my opinions are very much the minority. But I'll go to Zoe first. How do you feel about tournament weekends?
As a coach, I don't like them because especially this time of year when we've got state team athletes, you know, in these teams and we're so close to leaving for nationals and it's just such an opportunity for someone to get hurt or run into the ground. Yeah. As a player, I loved them.
Well, as the guy that had, and Coops, you were on staff with this, that had our best player injured at the tournament that ran over this weekend by, ironically enough, our manager at the time.
Yep.
You know, he was coaching the team. He didn't injure him. But it was one of those things where we got super paranoid about how are our kids going to look coming into and out of this tournament. You'd almost rather your kids kind of crash and burn a little bit from that end, so that, you know, they weren't playing in meaningful. Like they got reps, but they weren't getting sort of run into the ground because obviously the best kids play a lot of minutes, at like say the classic weekend, for example. So it is such a dangerous time.
Yeah, well, because of the load that goes onto them, and it's not just the in tournament threat. It's then the 2 weeks after. You know, Durham from Core Advantage talks about it all the time. About how 2 weeks after the Classic, 2 weeks after the Dandenong tournament in January, all that sort, 2 weeks after that is where kids sustain injury because of load. And it's, yeah, it's frightening as a HPC. So, but it's also, to talk the positives, as a player, you love it because you just basketball all day for 3 days. It's amazing. And as a coach in that situation too, you're getting really quick reps. You're learning what it's like to be in tournament play because it is different to seasonal play. So it is a good exposure. I just wish it wasn't 2 weeks from nationals, but anyway, so there are positives to it.
Yeah, for sure. Coops, what about you?
I love them if. I wanted to make sure
this
I couldn't
the,
get
yes with an
this
if,
is the
but no with a but.
Yeah, it's the equivalence to besties depends, which it is for every question that you ever get asked.
I think, you know, the way, like a European type model of, you know, 4 to 6 weeks of training and development into a tournament would be the best way to develop young people in our game.
Okay.
You know, I think there's room for maybe one or two because obviously tournament plays a big part of our pathway in terms of nationals prep and international prep.
Yep, and it's interesting because I don't hold a drastically different view in all. Like, I've been notorious for not playing tournaments as a coach, and it doesn't come from a I just can't be bothered perspective. It comes from a, geez, what's our next 6 weeks look like coming out of this tournament? do we really need this load at this point in time? Is there another way that we can get something out of it? I've spoken about it previously that we weren't going to play that preseason tournament that happens in January. We were going to go away and do a camp instead, because from that perspective, I could control the load a little bit better and what we were doing. And if someone had to sit out, it's no real stress. It was that kind of thing. So I think there's a place for tournaments. Like, I genuinely believe that it's actually a good thing, and I certainly know players love playing in them. It is the opportunity to hang out with people that are your friends. You get a lot of basketball in a really short amount of time, those types of things. So there is a lot of benefit to them. But when they run, you know, we have public holidays. When we have public holidays, maybe if we went to a 4-day work week, we could potentially
there you go. Okay.
We could potentially get a couple more tournaments in, which would make everyone happy. But, you know, it's that kind of thing too, where you've got to try and weigh up the pros and cons. Like, do you need to play in this tournament, or is this just a good idea to play in this tournament? Because there are some times I know previously where we might have had a bit of a rubbish season. We might have graded really high, but then really struggled when we've got there. Sometimes it's good to go into a tournament and just say, hey, let's drop it back a level. Let's experience a little bit of success and play around with some things. The tournament can be really beneficial for us too. So it is difficult to look at it from a high-level view and sort of say yes or no, good or bad or anything like that. But we do have to be a little bit careful too as coaches what we're walking into. Are we doing the right thing by our players, or are we just playing a tournament because everyone wants the trophy at the end of it? Like, there's an easier way to get that sort of thing. So, Coos, we'll start with you on this. What are the things? So, say you are playing a tournament. What is the pre-tournament work that you would put into your group before you get there?
Before we get there, I would start with exactly what you spoke about, Rob, which is what's the purpose, right? So, what are we going to this tournament for? Obviously, those heading to the Classic are thinking, you know, win, and it's obviously, you know, considered an elite event, which is understandable. But, you know, your Nutterwadding tournaments, your Ballarat tournaments, I'd like to think that they have the kind of scope that you're talking about. We're going away to just have fun as a team. We're going to have barbecue, and we're going to, you know, find a pool, and we're going to, you know, just enjoy playing. We're going to get a ton of minutes into some kids that maybe haven't played that much this year. You know, we're really going to maximize this opportunity to be away. You know, maybe the families come together a little bit more. You know, you're trying to do exactly what you're talking about, which is to make this a really enjoyable event and continue to promote love of the game. And that's why we're doing it. So if teams are going away to those other events, I hope that's the purpose. If they are going to the Classic and we're thinking about winning, yeah, the prep is, you know, you've got to think about tournament play. You've got to have a think about, you know, tournament math. You know, who are you playing? Who do you potentially cross over with? How am I minute managing? What results do we need to have? Can we afford to drop a game? Can't we? So I'd want to start thinking a little bit about that math, a little bit about the path in, you know, how we're going to get to our end result. And then really starting to tick off the, you know, those big ticket items that we know we're going to face. Okay, we've got Sydney Comets in our pool. We know that they're a big pressing team. You know, we have to beat them. They're the other better team in our pool. We've got to be great in our press break. You know, we've got to make sure we top our pool. Sydney stands in our way. Let's make sure that, you know, that's taken care of. So you want to go into it with a little bit of a plan that's going to give yourself the best chance of success.
Yep. What about you, Zoe? Are you looking at something similar, or is there something?
Yeah, definitely. I think sometimes we get a little caught up in winning every game to the point where it results in us losing. And as Coops mentioned, you know, there are some games you can afford to lose. And there are some games that if you lose, it makes your track to, say, the gold medal game easier. And
you're not advocating for tanking.
I'm not. That's not what I said. I just said don't be upset if you lose.
Basketball Australia office is about 20 feet away. The last thing we need is the integrity guys banging on the door saying, Zoe told me to tank.
No, I didn't say that. I said just don't be upset if you lose. That's all I said. But all that stuff's sort of important. Don't wait until results happen to know what's next. You should be going in with an idea of, okay, if we finish here, we'd cross over with this pool. You know, your knowledge of who's going to be there, you know, likely they're going to finish top, they're going to finish here, so we'd cross likely cross over here and all that sort of stuff and go in with that plan. And because if something goes wrong or something different happens, you can then quickly adjust to that because you've at least got something set. Whereas if you're waiting for the results to happen and trying to figure it out on the run, it ends up like the amount of times I've heard coaches walk away from it going, oh, I probably should have just played everyone even minutes in that game and it would have worked out better for us. So if you've got that plan, you're ready to go. I think there also does, and I know this is biased, so definitely admitting that from the get-go, but there's also needs to be a consideration of the athletes that are going to nationals and a bit of care for them. I think care for athletes needs to, and their well-being needs to probably sit above, you know, you're getting a medal or you winning or, you know, that sort of stuff. Because I can tell you now, nothing hurts more than an athlete that has to be replaced because they've been run into the ground and injured. So, and they will blame the team that they're in. They'll blame the coach. They'll blame that because that's a natural human reaction to, you know, just be hating on the world a little bit when something's taken away from you. So, having that plan of how am I going to still be successful for the other athletes in the team, because we don't discount them. We want to be successful, but how do I do that whilst managing this particular athlete? Is there a game where we know we could maybe sit them out, you know, or something like that? And like you said, Coops, like pour some minutes into some kids that don't normally get it, or but it all comes down to that preparation before you head into the tournament.
Yeah, it's funny how often it happens too. Like, there's a reason so few perfect brackets happen in the NCAA, where it's like, oh, this is what's going to happen. I'm going to play that team and this is how this is going to work. It's like, geez, I needed to know the point spread on this because this is head-to-head and I screwed this up and it's going to be a three-way tie because there's a game going at the same time and I don't know that result yet. You got to work all that sort of stuff out beforehand. So if you can have a little bit of a roadmap as to where I think this will work out, the amount of times I've been bumped out of a tournament by losing the first game of a tournament is crazy. And it's a lot of the time it's a game that you sort of feel like, oh, this is maybe a 50-50 or even a 60-40, we should win this. But your team comes in a little bit flat, underprepared, because it is a tournament. They're all worried about, you know, we've got to still be able to play on the Monday.
Or their game's at like 8:30 in the morning.
That sort of stuff. Like, it's that, to be fair, it's usually when I'm at my haziest. Yeah. So it's maybe my fault just as much as the players. But it is one of those things too where your tournament can be over in the first game. Mm. If you lose the wrong first game and the wrong crossover, it's like, geez, that's a team we should normally beat. And how many times do you see it where a team that is maybe not in the top half of a grade necessarily ends up in the top eight somewhere and they just had the right crossovers at the right time and it just works out for them. They won the right games. Mm. And that's where you end up. Like, it's so hard to work out.
And then another thing that's really, well, I believe is really important, whether you have aspirations to, you know, coach a state team or beyond, if you want your team to be successful, you also need a map of when you're going to go watch other teams that you potentially play. So obviously the first day it's probably teams within your pool, but then towards the back end of the first day you're probably starting to look at potential crossovers and things like that. It is exhausting, 100%. Not in any way trying to hide that. It is utterly exhausting because the amount of fresh air you get if you take that at that level of seriousness – is like from your car to the stadium, from your stadium to the car. Like, that's, you know, that's how it ends up. But that's really good preparation if you do have those aspirations of what it's like at a nationals. It is, or what it's like at a Worlds or beyond. So having those sort of, that's one of the things with tournaments I think is a real positive. It's a real lower pressure environment to be able to get those sort of reps and that sort of experience in of how to turn a scout around really quickly, how to present it to, you know, and you're probably talking more your 18s and maybe a smaller one for 16s. I wouldn't really bother with 12s and 14s, but how to keep it simple enough that they can implement something that you're talking about with, you know, 30 minutes notice or, you know, something like that. So I think that's really beneficial reps for coaches, and I'd encourage coaches to really throw themselves into that and see what it's like.
Well, even if they can't go and watch every game, it's a good time to make friends with other coaches. that are coaching in other pools that might have some film on someone that you can grab really quickly and have a little bit of a look at, well, okay, this is what I'm going to see. I'm going to jump on my phone in the car or walk around with the fresh air, have a little bit of a look at this team play so I know what I'm going to be walking into as well. So there's some things that you can do ahead of time that can really help. I know for those of you that are playing interstate teams, you might contact someone that you know within that state. Have you seen this team play? Have you got film on them? Those types of things. So it can really help you just plan out what the tournament's going to look like from the start. The other thing I'm really big on with kids is prepare for not leaving a stadium. I would always recommend leave the stadium if you can and get out of there and get, you know, a change of environment, those types of things. But if you can't, food, drink, everything that you can do to rehab, prehab straight after a game is vital, in all honesty, for those kids. And the amount of people, and you can normally see how their team's going as they're walking away from the canteen with a bucket of chips. It's like, oh, right, you guys are out. That's probably not going to happen for you. It's those types of things too. But just prepare for the nutrition side of things as well, yeah, so that they are in a position where game's finished, I've got to refuel quickly because I've got another game in 3 hours' time that I have to be prepared for. Not the easiest thing to do. Could you change how you coach in a tournament compared to a season? Is it vastly different on your end?
Yeah, very much so. You know, in a season, you can kind of use that cliche of, you know, we can take it week by week. You know, you can slow down, you can be a lot more deliberate. You know, we can we can talk a little bit more macro and maybe some culture stuff and things that we spoke about at the start of the year. But tournament plays a bubble. You know, you're in that bubble. You're in that bubble for however long it is, you know, a week, 2 weeks, whatever tournament you're playing. And it ties into the stuff that you guys are talking about. Like, you have such a narrow focus and such little time that the way that you're coaching is really what's next. Finish the game, recovery. Finish recovery, rest. Finish rest, you know, hydrate, food. Coaches might be, again, scouting. You know, it's you've got to have a really good understanding of where you need to be and what you need to prioritize. Hence why we're really big with our state coaches, or like us with the national team, with scheduling. You know, we really map out the day because we know we've got to maximize every minute to get out of it what we can to give ourselves the best chance to win. So, yeah, it's a very different way of going about things.
And we sort of touched on it without touching on it, the minute distribution in particular with how you play everyone. Very rarely does the team that's not super deep go overly well in these tournaments, because a lot of the other teams have to put a lot of minutes into their better kids, for lack of a better term, to really progress. Whereas really, if you can distribute those minutes a little bit more evenly across the court, you've got a fresher kid by the time you're getting to crossovers, those types of things. That matters so much. Do you keep a real eye on that, Zoe, or is that something you're pretty content to just kind of leave and it plays out how it plays out?
No, I'm big on it.
Yep. So do you go into like a game thinking, I'm going to try and get minutes out of this player, or do you play it by ear?
If it's like the first game in the tournament, yep, I'm going in trying to be as even as possible. And it's an instruction to my assistant coach to keep an eye on that as well, because obviously as head coaches, things come up and we lose a little bit of track. The hard part is committing to that. So if you're in a game...
Are you suggesting that coaches are super competitive and go slightly left when they thought they were going right?
Yeah.
Because I am that coach, yeah, as it turns out.
But again, if you've got your plan in place, and you know that that's a game that's not necessarily going to hurt you if you dropped or anything, that helps you stay committed to that plan. It's also then, you know, you're planning again. So if I go into this game, when am I going to need my best players to be on the floor? Probably the last 5 minutes of the last quarter, definitely. So how do I structure this to make sure that I've still got, you know, even minutes into everybody, and I can have them on to finish the game to make sure we get the W. But yeah, I must admit, early in my coaching, I tried to win everything all the time, and it was, oh God, some of the kids that I've probably destroyed as a result. Like, they're coming off to these tournaments and expecting to play, and they're just getting... They all played, but they got,
yeah, not as much,
they got
as they
shafted.
They,
it was horrible. I'm not at all proud of it. But obviously, through experience and coaching, that's just not what I'm about anymore. And You know, winning things like the Classic or the Ballarat Tournament, Nunawading Tournament or Dandenong Tournament. Like, they're great. Who won them last year?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can't tell you. I work in the sport.
Like, who won VJBL 2 years ago?
Yeah.
I couldn't tell you.
So it's like, you know, what is most important here? You know, give them an opportunity. Yes, we want them to try and win. Of course, we don't want to. We're not trying to beat out competitiveness and learning how to win. But yeah, for me, that part's not important anymore.
Will the tournament be a time to mess up some lineups and just like go super big for a little bit or super small for a little bit? Or hey, we don't normally play this group of kids together. Let's have a crack at it now.
Yeah, I think that's a common mistake that we get really comfortable. You know, in how we rotate and who's on the floor together at the same time. And it's okay to experiment. It's okay to do, you know, you can always sub. You know, there's opportunities to do that. So, yeah, you know, challenge yourself. Be a little bit innovative. Try some different things. I think another common mistake which catches coaches out, and I used to do this a lot, you know, when I was a younger coach, was when you're naturally rotating through your team, ending up with your five bench players on the floor at the same time. And now you're getting frustrated and it's like, oh, what? You know, I don't want to play these kids and they're not good enough. Everything like that. It's like, no. You can manage that. You know, you can bring starters or more trustworthy athletes back earlier and have combinations where you'll say weaker, but, you know, weaker athletes get to play with stronger athletes to balance it out. And now you've got more opportunities to get that minute distribution that we're talking about.
Or start one or two of them off the bench.
Yeah, right.
You know, make them the leader of that second unit. That'll help with your looking after your minutes. And then by the last five, you'll be able to play that main five that you really want to start the game with.
And a lot of the time it's the best scorer that almost gets sacrificed to the bench. It's like, well, hey, I know they can get a bucket whenever they want to get a bucket. They might need to play with some of the players that are a little bit further down the pecking order. Because if nothing else, I know the scoreboard will continue to tick over with that kid on the court.
And but if you're going to do that, if that's something that's unusual, like you have the same starting five every week and then you go into a tournament and you're going to move somebody to the bench, you need to communicate that. You need to explain why you're doing it, that it's not a punishment or and that you want them to own that second unit. Like, you are in charge of this group and, you know, all that sort of stuff. Pump them up a little bit, because there is a bit of a misconception that the starters are the most important.
Yeah.
And it's the old cliche of, you know, if you're finishing the game, that's what's most important.
Comes to knowing your athletes too, right? Yeah. Some players need to start. They need to kind of, for whatever reason, get some butterflies out, or they like to get the ball in their hands early, where I'm sure you guys and a lot of our listeners would have those athletes that like to see the game from the bench for a minute or two and just kind of...
Or just need the sting to go out of it a little bit. Just slow it down a second and then bring them in. Yeah. And that's where they're most, you know, like you might have a point guard who is all pace, you know, lightning quick. Bring them off the bench once the game has slowed down and watch what happens to your scoreboard. Like, it will explode.
Well, this is a good time to trial and error, I find, too. Like, I do view tournaments as a great time to try some different things and see if I can do things a little bit differently. There was one year, and you're both going to roll your eyes at me because it's something that neither of you really believe in. I installed an entire dribble drive offense halfway through a classic tournament because it's like, well, we were sucking. We weren't going overly well. And it's like, you know what? Let's just try something
different. Let's all just dribble into the key.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was.
If young athletes need more of something, it's dribbling.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Exactly right. Underutilized.
Okay, thank you both. It was 2013, maybe even 2012. It was a while ago now. And dribble drive was the new thing that nobody could guard. So
I love how defensive you're getting. It's great.
Not defensive, justified. But it was something different. It's like, you know what? This is something different. I think from memory, we had like four kids go off to footy during that tournament anyway. We had like six kids. I think three of them were injured. And it's like, you know what? Let's just try something completely different that we don't do, because we were a pass and cut team. I'd like to think ahead of my time, but clearly not. But it was one of those areas. It's like, hey, let's just try something completely different. And we actually stuck with it a little bit coming out of that tournament too. Like, we didn't throw it out completely, because there were some times where it's like, actually, this kind of works okay for us. It was an opportunity to just try something different. I love the opportunity to try and whiteboard something against a team that you haven't seen before as well. Like, playing an interstate team, I love that. Like, that for me is great, because you can kind of go in and it's like, okay, I know who that team's best four players are because we see them every third week playing in Victoria. Someone different, it's like, geez, I've got to try and work this out. Who is their most important kid? How do I take that away really quickly? How can I punish it at the other end as well? Can I whiteboard something to really get the matchup that I want? What are they going to do to me? I don't know who this coach is. I don't know what their tendencies are. I don't know what their traits are. And you get used to it. You coach against the same coaches all the time. It's like, I know where their button is. If we score four times in a row, something's going to happen. Or, you know, this press will come when that kid subs in. You get used to it. Being able to coach on the fly again is actually really exhilarating. I really miss that. Like from that side of things, just being able to try and work it out again. It's, you know, there's something to that.
But also things like use the opportunity to throw some things at your kids that they've never seen before, like what you were saying, of whiteboard something and see if they can execute it. You know, we've been doing a bit of that in some of our sessions of, okay, there's, you know, 3 seconds to go, your baseline out of bounds, and the instruction to the coaches is it has to be something outside of our stuff, something brand new, and see if they can execute. Because whilst that's not something you want to rely on, sometimes you got to go to something different because of the flow of the game or
your best
athletes in or out. Yeah, exactly. Sure. So, it's just keep an eye on development.
God forbid. No, it is genuinely one of those things. I'd love the tournament coaching aspect of it in that you get a lot of reps in a really short amount of time. But it is also probably where problems are going to rear their heads a little bit because there has been a lot of touch points in a really short amount of time.
And fatigue.
Fatigue kicks in, potentially injuries kicked in. All those types of things start to come to a head. So the importance of staying on top of those types of things and making sure that there isn't someone separating themselves from the group. If the group's together but there's one player that's not involved in it, staying on top of that. If you do have some words with a player during the tournament, making sure you mend that bridge really quickly again because you're going to need them again in 3 or 4 hours' time. Those types of things. Problems do certainly start to pop up. So I think it's important for the coaches to jump on top of those things and make sure that's not going to be a problem that's going to see you out for the course of the season too. Coming out of a tournament, Coops, what should the week look like after a tournament? Because obviously there's a really high spike in load for probably 3 or 4 days that we're looking at coming up this weekend. What should the weekend or that week following look like?
Light.
Yeah.
Light.
Yep.
It has to be athlete prioritized. You know, the load has to come first. You know, you can't just switch back into we're trying to win VC mode or whatever the purpose is of your season. You've decided to take the athletes into a tournament. You know, you've pushed them. And now you got to look after them. And it's negligent, you know, to not do that because the research shows that if we don't, they're going to get injured. And so the best thing there is, okay, well, how else do we get better? And there's always opportunities to do that. And you've just put, you know, whatever, 5, 6, 8 games, you know, into athletes. You've got games on film. You've got notes. Okay, well, if we're not on the floor or everything's really light, you know, let's evaluate. Let's evaluate how we went at the tournament. Let's evaluate how we went individually. Let's sit down with our athlete journals. Let's sit down with a peer. Hey, you know, these are the 3 things I thought you did really well. Yep. You know, so I think there's a way to really maximize the learning whilst managing the load.
Yeah, and it's one of those things too where the parents have probably done a fair chunk of driving over that weekend. Maybe the Tuesday, Wednesday night session doesn't need to exist. Maybe that can just be, hey, we're not training this week. Or we're doing a pool session instead. Like we're going to try and really take the load out of them, get them doing some movement stuff so that the body's not sore because they'll probably have to back up again on the Friday, Saturday, depending on which state you're playing in and those types of things. So it is an important thing to just really look at the other end of the tournament and just make sure that you're not adding more and more load into them when really they're trying to come back out the other way. Like, I don't know a player that after a tournament walks the same way at the end of it as they did at the start. They look like they're just sort of carrying the weight of the world on their shoulders. It's, you know, they always pick up something. So being really conscious of that, if you're in the position where you have a physio that might be a part of your club or something like that, that might be the time to get them in. Hey, can we do a stretching and a rolling session next week as a group? That might be a more efficient use of your time rather than getting back on court. Or if you're going to be on court, it's just shooting or it's just a walkthrough or those types of things are probably a better
just use stay of away time. From the court. Stay away from it because you'll get sucked into training and doing something.
Oh, we'll just go 5-on-5 for a couple of positions.
Remember when we got this wrong? But I'd stay away from the court. I'd highly advocate like a pool session with the journaling and a bit of a recap. But yeah, short, sharp. Get them home. Get them to bed. But the really important part is the game. Then on that coming out on that Friday, it's really important that those minute loads are managed there. That's, you know, if you can get it that it's even minutes or as close to even minutes as possible, then, you know, you're doing pretty well. If it's a game, you know, and you've coming out of it, you've realised you've put a lot of load into a couple of players, like it's got away from you, and that happens, can you sit them out, sit one of them out, sit two, both of them out, or something like that, just to really manage that and make sure we look after them and minimise the risk of injury.
Yeah, just scaffolding on that, like coming back to what you were talking about, Rob, in that challenge of coaching, you know, I mean, especially in a tournament play where, you know, maybe you don't know the coach and you don't know the system and, you know, you're on your toes, which is fun. Like that's one of the reasons we do this. Yeah, how, the challenge of being able to get a result, and whether that's a win or to play well, that's obviously up to the coach. But being able to do that when sitting out one of your better players because of that management, take on the challenge.
Yeah.
Like you don't have to, our best player didn't play, and, you know, go into this kind of negative mindset. It's like, okay, I know I'm going to look after that young man or woman because, you know, they need the rest, and I make sure that I'm an athlete first coach. All right, challenge on to me now. What can I do from a coaching perspective to see if we can get the job done without them?
Yeah, and let's face it, the amount of times we've all lost to a team that didn't have their best player or was short on numbers, like the amount of times I've lost to a team with six players is ridiculous and so frustrating. Like I nearly count every single one of them, but it's because the players play with a little bit more freedom. Like they'll take a shot they wouldn't normally shoot because it's like, well, you can't sub me out, coach, so best of luck.
Yeah,
it's that kind of thing.
Pressure's off.
Yeah, yep. What's it matter? And you know, I normally write off that first game after a tournament. It's like, hey, whatever happens, happens here. Like we're certainly not sort of counting this one as a bit of a win or a loss one way or the other, but it's like, look, we'll just sort of fly by the seat of their pants a little bit here. And, you know, if we've got bodies, great. If we don't, we don't. Like, it's just kind of how it is. But everyone will be in the same boat. Like, because there is a part of it too where it's like, well, okay, we're playing a team that didn't play in the tournament over this weekend. They'll be fresh. They might be fresh, but they may not be as sharp. Mm. Like, you've just played a lot of games in a short period of time. It's amazing how cohesive your team will get with that as well. And that's, you know, obviously a benefit of playing in a tournament like that, is that you do get the opportunity to rep out a lot of things. So there's tons of stuff that you can take from it. But I think the overarching message is please look after your players.
Yeah,
that's the biggest thing. And that doesn't mean, obviously, state kids are one thing that have a level with them, but even just your other kids, it doesn't matter if they're not a state kid. Don't play an injured kid. Like those types of things, if that's going to cause problems, don't do it. It's look after the kids, because honestly, they're what we're hearing it for in the first place. Please look after your athletes when you're in tournaments, because these are where problems can occur, it'd be fair to say.
Something too, just to remember as well, is it's really hard to implement change from game to game without a practice. Yeah, and we think that we can, and with the right instruction and the right whiteboard and, you know, all these sorts of things that we can do it. It's really hard for these young people to be able to do that. They need the practice, they need the reps, you know, we know they learn by doing. So having some realistic expectations around how much change you're going to get from them from game to game, I think is going to help them and importantly help your frustration levels. But yeah, just doubling down what you said, Rob, you know, please, please look after your athletes. Please put them first.
Excellent. That does wrap us up for this week. No book club. I actually haven't been reading a whole lot of late, so I do need to get on something over the course of the next week. Coaches, if you do have anything for book club, please record yourself, send it in, and we'll throw it on the podcast as well. But for those of you that are in tournaments, good luck. For those of you not in tournaments, enjoy some peace, tranquility, some time off. Fire up the barbecue if that's your
go.
Thing. Jump into it. But thank you both for jumping in. Coos, if we don't see or hear from you before Worlds, I don't know if we do or not. I'm just trying to work out the calendar in my head. I don't know that we do, to be completely honest, but good luck. We all hope it goes well, and we will not be the people pot-shotting you on social media if it doesn't. So that's okay. Best of luck to you for it.
Much appreciated.
Thank you, guys. Coaches, good luck over the weekend.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Talking Split Podcast. Make sure you like and comment on your favorite podcast platform. And don't forget to share and subscribe so that you never miss an episode.